That was the year, recreating notable events of passing time, reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year. Collinwood, Ohio, March 4. In this small town just 6 miles from Cleveland, on this bright spring morning, hundreds of pupils have been in their seats about a half hour. In the room of fifth grade teacher Laura Bodie.
Now, children, what was the first settlement in Georgia? Raise your hands. All right, Kenneth.
The first settlement in Georgia was Savannah.
That's right. Now, who can tell me the name of the man who... Oh, it's a fire drill. Come, children, get into formation as usual. All right, Jenny Phillips, you lead.
Miss Bodie, look.
What is it, Jenny?
There's smoke coming in through the crack in the door.
Smoke? Now, never mind. Come along, children.
Gee, I'm scared,
right,
Miss Bodie.
Now, don't be scared.
Stricken with uncontrollable panic, many children broke the ranks, which they had been trained to keep in fire drill. Some of the teachers, too, upon seeing the flames licking round the staircases and banisters in the front of the building, led the stampede for the rear stairs. There they found the only means to escape barred, and as the crush against the door increased, horrified parents and townspeople smashed windows in vain attempts to pull the children to safety. And as the flames leaped toward the stricken pupils and teachers, those outside stood in tragic helplessness, watching the Lakeview School become a roaring holocaust. When the toll had been counted, more than 200 were dead, dying, or permanently maimed.
That was the year.
Lisbon, Portugal, February 1. As the monarch of Portugal, termed by his subjects Jolly King Carlos, returned from a vacation with his wife, Queen Marie Amélie, and their two sons, Crown Prince Luis and Prince Manuel, four men assassinated the king and the crown prince, wounded Manuel. Three of the assassins were killed almost instantly by a mob. The fourth, captured by police, explained as justification of their act the heavy burden of taxation King Carlos had placed upon his people.
That was the year
that two of the most dramatic moments ever known in the world of sport occurred. One at Shepherd's Bush near London, England, during the fourth modern Olympiad. A news writer talks to the leader of the American expedition, James J. Sullivan.
Well, this is a big day, isn't it, Mr. Sullivan?
You bet it is. The marathon.
They should be coming in pretty soon now. How's it going?
Well, the Italian, Durando, is still in the lead. He's held it ever since they left Windsor.
How about the American, Johnny Hayes?
Oh, Johnny's a great distance man. But I'm afraid this little Italian is going to take him today. There's a real man, Durando. He's a poor laborer from Italy who had a friend in London here, a waiter. His friend has been keeping Durando in food and lodging ever since he arrived a couple of weeks ago.
What's that?
It's outside the stadium. Must be the first of the marathon runners. Yep, there he comes. Through that entrance down there. It's Durando. Oh, poor little fella. He'll never make it.
Why?
Well, he's all in. Look at him totter. He's reeling.
Who's that? Running out onto the track.
One of the Italian trainers. Hey, get off the track there. You can't do that. Durando's fallen.
But that traitor is picking him up. There comes somebody else. They're both helping him.
Hey, leave that man alone. Here comes Hayes. Come on, Johnny. Come on, boy.
Come, Durando, old fellow. Here, help him. Just 30 yards more. Come on.
Hey, you're an official. Leave Durando alone. Come on, Johnny.
Hey, Mr. Sullivan, look. They're carrying Durando across the finish
line. Come on.
Borne across the finish line by an excited official and his trainers, the senseless body of Durando is not declared the winner in the grueling 26-mile run. And first place went to Johnny Hayes of the U.S. The next evening, at a ball given by His Majesty's government, the founder of the modern Olympic Games, Baron Pierre de Coubertin, softened Durando's official defeat by the diplomatic statement,
"The importance of life is not so much in triumph as in combat. The prime essential is not so much to have conquered as to have been honorably beaten."
A few months later, the Polo Grounds, New York City, September 23.
In the struggle between New York and Chicago to decide which team shall lead the National League, this is the final game of the series. It is the last half of the ninth inning. The score is tied 1-1. New York is a bat. Two men are out, one on third, and Fred Merkel on first. Bidwell, up to bat, knocks a safe hit. The man on third runs home. But what does Merkel do? Chicago second baseman Johnny Evers declares Merkel did not touch second. Merkel declares he did. Fans for both nines stream onto the diamond. Merkel's teammates try to drag him to second base. The Chicago players hold him back. The ball is tossed by an unknown person into the grandstand. A Chicago fan gets the ball, throws it to Evers. Evers struggles to second base, touches it, then looks for the umpire for a decision. But the umpire has already been escorted from the field by a police squad. What actually happened, the world will never know for fact. But President Pullman of the National League decided the game was a tie, and thus it has stood. And thus also has stood the epithet hurled first at Frederick Charles Merkel, and without which no game of the great American sport has since been complete, Bonehead.
1908, that was the year.
Springfield, Illinois, August 14, in the office of Sheriff Werner.
It's no use, Sheriff. That mob's too much for us. They'll get those black boys sooner or later.
No, they won't. Give me that phone. Now, get me the office of the fire chief, quick.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to show that gang out there that mob rule has no place in Sangamon County. Hello, Chief. Sheriff Warner. Yeah. Say, I want you to take about four fire trucks and send them to some place about four blocks away from the county jail. Yeah. Now, I'll explain later. Now, just do that, will you? Okay, thanks. Now we'll see what a good three alarm will do to that mob out there.
As the red horse-drawn trucks sped past the jail, the mob outside turned quickly, followed them on their feigned false alarm. Meanwhile, two Negroes sought by the crowd for lynching were spirited away to Bloomington by restaurant manager Harry Loper. When the mob realized how they'd been duped, they spent their vengeance upon Loper's cafe, demolishing fixtures and equipment, and then turned toward the color district of Springfield, killing, pillaging, terrifying almost the entire Negro population into flight. Race rioting continued for several days, until 4,000 militiamen took over the city in martial law.
That was the year
that Tony Pastor, Dean of American Music Halls, he who created the first music hall in 1865, died in New York City.
That was the year
that death came also to former president of the U.S., Grover Cleveland, in his 71st year.
That was the year
that after 40 years as president of Harvard University, Charles William Eliot resigned, later to take his place in a new fame within 5 feet of thousands of American bookshelves.
That was the year
that 100 thousands of dollars were paid to the British government as ransom for Caid Sir Harry McLean.
That Persia sent a diplomatic representative to Greece for the first time in 2,399 years.
That there began the decline of New York's greatest social dynasty with the passing of Mrs. William Astor.
1908, that was the year.
Nashville, Tennessee, November 9, about 4 p.m. Colonel Duncan B. Cooper, his 27-year-old son, Robin, and a friend, Jack Sharp, leave the Cooper office, head in the direction of Governor Patterson's mansion. The two younger men walk ahead a few paces, while Colonel Cooper lags behind, struggling with difficulty up the steep hill.
How are you coming, Colonel?
All right, Jack. You boys, keep on.
All right, sir. Go ahead, Robin.
Well, Papa told Mr. Craig to tell Senator Carmack that he considered him an ingrate and a coward for saying things in print that he didn't dare say to his face. He told Craig to tell Carmack that he'd have to stop using Papa's name in his paper.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I got Uncle Robin to give me a gun.
Say, look,
There comes Carmack.
Oh, don't let Papa see him. Come on, Papa. Let's hurry.
Oh, yes. Say, wait a minute. What's the matter? Is that Carmack? I'll go speak to him.
No, Dad. You mustn't.
Oh, I know Carmack, and he knows me. There'll be no trouble. Senator Carmack.
Robin, Carmack's drawn a gun.
When the smoke of the roaring guns had cleared, former Senator Edward Ward Carmack lay dead in a Nashville gutter. Both Coopers and Sharp were indicted for murder. After months of harrowing trial procedure for jury, deliberating 70 hours, returned a verdict of not guilty for Sharp, guilty of second-degree murder for Colonel Cooper and his son. About a year and a half after the killing, on April 14, 1910, the two Coopers were pardoned by Governor Patterson.
1908, that was the year.
Of the Merry Widow hat, the sheath gown, and the ladder to be outlawed, aigrette.
That was the year.
Of the flippant phrase denoting sympathetic appreciation for any personal dilemma.
Ain't it awful, Mabel?
That was the year.
That the theater presented The Melting Pot by Israel Zangwill. Charles Rand Kennedy's The Servant in the House. Minnie Madden Fisk in Salvation Nell. James K. Hackett in The Prisoner of Zenda.
That was the year.
That you were reading John Fox Jr.'s The Trail of the Lonesome Pine. The Circular Staircase by Mary Roberts Reinhardt. Rex Beecher's The Barrier. Edith Wharton's The Fruit of the Tree.
And that was the year
that a gay little redskin girl rode rhythmically across the keyboards of millions of pianos.
There once lived an Indian maid,
a shy little fairy maid, who sang a lay a love song gay.
As on the plain she fled away the day, she loved a warrior bold.
This shy little maid of old, but brave and gay he rode one day
to battle far away. Now the moon shines tonight on pretty red wing. The breeze is sighing, the night bird's crying. For afar neath the star her brave is sleeping, while red wing's weeping her heart away. She watched for him day and night.
She kept all the campfires bright. Under the
sky
each night she would lie
and dream about his coming by and by. But when all the braves returned,
the heart of Red Wing yearned for far, far away her warrior gay.
Fell bravely in the fray. Now the moon shines tonight on pretty Red Wing. The breeze is sighing, the night was crying. For afar neath the star her brave is weeping, while Red Wing's weeping her heart away. The moon shines tonight on pretty Red Wing. The breeze is sighing, the night bird's crying. For afar beneath the star, babe is sleeping, while Red Wing's weeping.